Hey guys, I'm Ashley and I'm the daughter.
I'm Liz and I'm the mom.
And this is The Lesser Known. Okay, so before we start, I have a serious question to ask you.
Okay.
Do you think we sound like Beavis and Butthead when we laugh on the podcast?
I hope not. I've never thought about it.
Because I was thinking about like editing and how sometimes like our laugh sounds weird when we edit. And then for some reason, Beavis and Butthead popped in my head and I couldn't unhear it.
I totally forgot about that show.
Anyway, so if we sound like Beavis and Butthead, I guess let us know.
We'll put a little poll. We'll put a poll on one of our Instagram stories.
And on the pod. So you can vote yes for Beavis and Butthead or no. We don't sound like them. All right. So the real question of the day is, if you had unlimited money, what would you do with it and why?
That's a really broad question.
I know.
I can tell you, I'll just go over a couple of things because, you know, I can't possibly, this could, would be a whole podcast episode, but definitely quit my job. And I would still want to do something. So I think I would still want to do something like this. Like I would still want to do a podcast just so I have a purpose and something fun to do because I do love doing this. So I would continue to do this. And right now I live on the East Coast of Florida. But I think I would move to the West Coast of Florida because I feel like I click with people over there a little more. They're a little more chill and like feel like Midwesterners like us. So I think I'd move over there. I would probably try to get a place where I could have maybe near the city, but not in the city, where I could still have animals, like little fenced areas so I can get like goats and pigs and, you know, like little rescue animals, but also be close enough to where I can get to the city and do fun stuff at night.
Yeah.
So I would also probably try to travel out of the country like 3 times a year or more. Who knows? If I had unlimited money, who knows what I'll do?
Yeah. I thought for sure you would say something about animal rescue, which you did.
Oh, for sure.
But
yeah.
But at first I was like, man, is she going to say that? Because I thought that was like, you know, the biggest thing that you would do.
Yeah, I'd 100%.
I would do something similar. I would probably buy a bunch of land and then go to those dog shelters, like the kill ones, and then buy all the dogs and then go put them on the land just to like run free.
Right. So when people come to adopt them, they're more in their natural state. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not cooped up in a cage just waiting, you know.
Right, because they're not themselves.
Yeah, and it's really sad to see them like that. So that I would do that and then obviously travel. I would – oh, and I was thinking about it last night. I would probably not just travel but go on those it's not a retreat – but it's like where you help people, almost like Habitat for Humanity, but you go into another country and then you learn their language and their culture and then you help them build stuff or help them learn about something. Yeah, they have those all over. It's like like you don't get paid for it, but you volunteer for it and then they give you food and shelter and things like that. So all you have to do is pay your way out there.
Oh, that'd
so
be nice.
So I would do that. Yeah, and then donate.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so now we're going to do a couple of shout-outs. Mom, did you want to start?
Yeah, so the next 5 Instagram followers I wanted to give a shout-out to are Taylor Sterling, Allison Ramsdale, Matt, who goes by Moose in a Lake, Natalie Stewart, and I think I'm saying this right, Wiesel Meyer. Those are my 5. So thanks, guys.
Oh, that's cool. I like the Moose in the Lake one.
I know.
I want to give 2 shout outs just for a couple of my friends. there is someone who coaches our CrossFit class on Tuesday. His name is Chris, and he gave our podcast a shout out before class started. So that gave us a few followers, and I really appreciated that. So yeah. So thank you, Chris, for making us known and being our hype man. And the next shout out I want to give, we kind of already did last week because he's also an Instagram follower, but I just wanted to give him a shout out again. His name is Ryan, R-Y-N-E, not Ryan, Ryan.
I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's one of my friends, and he said that our podcast gives the motivation for him to work out and get through his workout. So I thought that was really sweet.
That's so nice. What a great compliment.
I know. So today we're going to talk about Yosemite, which is a place that I have actually been to again. I feel like it's kind of nice that we're doing two back-to-back places that I've been, because I can kind of speak to it a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Yosemite is located in the Sierra Nevada Mountains in California. The park covers 759,620 acres, making it the second largest park in the country, and it's composed of granite cliffs, waterfalls, clear streams, giant sequoia groves, lakes, mountains, and meadows that were formed by glaciers. Yeah. The park shows immense beauty on the outside, but on the inside, it holds on to dark secrets. I know. So in this episode, we'll go over mysterious disappearances, an enchanting waterfall, ancient curses, unsettling sights, a felonious plane crash, and some lesser-known facts about the park.
Yes.
I know. It's exciting.
This sounds like a good one.
I know. There's a lot, and it's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. To start, let's go over the history about the park. In 1849, settlers, miners, and tourists gathered in the region because of the California Gold Rush. To prevent human-caused destruction to the area, President Abraham Lincoln signed the Yosemite Grant on June 30, 1864, which was the first time land was set aside specifically for preservation and public use by the U.S. government. So it wasn't made a national park yet. It was just set aside to preserve the land. In 1890, Yosemite finally became a national park, making it the third national park in the U.S., after Yellowstone in 1872 and Sequoia in 1890. Yosemite gets approximately 4.4 million visitors a year and is considered the second most dangerous park in the U.S. with a total of 126 deaths per year.
Oh, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah. So do you want to take a guess at what the most common cause of death is?
Disappearances?
No.
But you, that is a cause of death?
I know, but I thought you would get it because you've said it before. It's okay. Falling.
Oh. The one time I don't pick falling.
I know, because you said it every single time. So I'm like, oh, for sure she's going to get it. And then this time, disappearances.
Well, I just remember there was like a ton of disappearances there.
I know. So I did find a legend of, you know, what like the different deaths are. So out of the 126 people that die a year, 17 are caused from drowning, 5 are from vehicle accidents, 45 are from falling, 1 is from bicycle accidents. So only, yeah, I know. I thought that was like a weird, 8 are from environmental, so like weather and things like that.
Like maybe they got lost or something.
Mm-hmm. 1 is from poisoning. 0 from wildlife, which I was surprised because they do have bears.
Right.
I know. And cougars.
Oh.
Yeah. And I have a bear story in a second for you from when I visited.
Okay.
10 are from other. So, you know, come to your own conclusion.
whatnot.
Yeah. 26 are from medical or natural disaster. So maybe not.
Yeah. That would be the okay.
Yeah.
You're right. Draw your own conclusions. I like that explanation.
And then 13 are undetermined.
Disappearances. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly what I said. So these undetermined deaths can be largely due to the fact that every year hundreds of people go missing in the park, and some are never found, some are found dead, and those who are lucky enough to be found alive are said to have memory loss and amnesia, and they can't recall how they got lost or anything that happened between the time they went missing until they were found.
Yosemite. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. I don't know what's going on there, but like anything I've ever seen about Yosemite, it's like people are just like not right after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say this isn't the only place that this has happened, but it is the place that has happened the most.
Oh.
And there's a couple theories as to why.
Okay. Oh, so they think they know why people are coming out and not remembering?
They're just theories. Everyone has no clue why, but there's a ton of people who have come up with interesting theories, including myself. I came up with one.
Oh, you got your own theory?
And I did. Yeah.
You better Wikipedia that.
I know. And I was TM, trademark. but I think my theory is pretty good. There might be some loopholes, but that's why it's a theory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and have to prove it. So, yeah. Maybe it'll like sprue up some researchers to go out and
is sprue you know, up a word?
I don't know. That's my word.
Sprue up those researchers right away.
Yeah, you know, they'll get on.
I mean, I get what you're saying. So, if we understand it, I suppose it is a word.
Yeah, you knew where I was going with that. So anyway, maybe it'll like kind sprue of make up. Their minds, yeah, sprue up the researchers to come to the park and test what my theory is.
I'm ready.
Well, before we jump into that, let me tell you my bear story.
Oh, yeah.
Really quick. Yeah. So me and Jeremy, who like for those of you who don't know, is my fiance. I know I've mentioned him a lot. But me and Jeremy were out hiking in Yosemite, and we didn't plan it very well. So I will say, if you go hiking there, make sure you plan what trail you want to go on, because there's a million trails, a million people, and it's really hard to get around and actually do a hike. So we only ended up whitewater rafting. We didn't even go for a hike because we couldn't decide on which hike to do and what has the best views. So definitely do your research before going. Okay. Anyway, my friend had recommended that we do this one hike, and he sent me a pin of where it was at. And so we went to the pin. It looked like the roads were closed, but there was still like something that looked like it could be a trail. So we pulled over and parked, and we went on this maybe trail, and it led up to what looked like an old service road. Mm-hmm. So there was like trees and stuff that had fallen, which I can assume was from snow melting and flash floods. Yeah, yeah. And just, yeah, over the years, you know, roads becoming unserviceable, like stuff falling in the way. And there was like an old abandoned building. It was kind of creepy, but we continued on, and we were like, you know what? If this has a great view at the top, why not? And this was before I knew how dangerous Yosemite was. Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't have done that if I had known. So we walked about a mile, and we were just going straight uphill, but it felt like we were going nowhere because it was the same stuff over and over again. And then we get to one part of the trail, and there was like this really pretty pink fungus looking thing, like a pink mushroom. Yeah, it was like bright pink and purple and super pretty. And we were like, oh my God, what is that? Yeah. That's crazy looking. So we walk over to it. We're taking pictures. And then all of a sudden we hear like a woof. Yeah. And we were like,
oh my God.
We both paused and looked at each other. And we were like, was that a bear? Because it sounded like a low growl grunt. Like as if the bear was like, I'm here. back up.
Warning you, right?
Yeah. And then so we like paused because we didn't know what kind of bear it was. Mm-hmm. And we listened and it did it again. So we slowly like backed up. And Jeremy doesn't have his gun or anything. So we're completely unarmed if anything were to happen. So like we slowly back up and we walk back the way we came. And then we kept like – I mean we were scared. We kept looking around and seeing if there was like a bear in the trees or on the ground or mm-hmm. over the hills or whatever. And we didn't see anything. So we just went back. We didn't even continue.
That could have
and
been
we were like, you know
so
what?
So bad.
Yeah.
Like so, so bad. I've heard so many stories. Like, you know, we've been doing research on these national parks and I think it was National Park After Dark did an episode about this couple that got attacked by a bear, but they actually lived through it.
Oh.
And then the description of it. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could have been really bad.
I know. We were
good thing
terrified.
The bear warned you.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said before, and you know, a couple episodes ago, I was like, normally I feel like they warn you because they don't want to attack humans.
Yeah, I'm sure. So scary.
So okay, now we'll kind of jump into the missing persons and we'll talk about, you know, the like why these are strange disappearances. And some theories and examples.
Okay.
Okay. So I just want to say that normally when we talk about people that go missing, usually when they're found, they have a determined death, like heat stroke, drowning, falling, or whatever the case may be. But these people were have said to essentially vanish out of thin air. And normally it's, I guess these people say that they're going berry picking and they never return, or they do disappear with their family. So one minute they'll be there, their family will see them. The next they're just gone.
Wait, the whole family's gone?
No, just the one person is gone and the family sees it. Or like a more common reoccurring theme also is that it's the first in line or the last in line. So if people are hiking in a line, they just, the first or the last just disappear.
How could the first disappear without the people seeing it? The person.
Well, like, you know how if you turn around, you're like, oh, hey, Joe, like in the back, and then you turn back around and the front person is just gone. Or maybe the front person
That's what they're
is
saying.
Like
people are just vanishing like that?
Vanishing.
Oh, man.
I know. It's crazy. So that's kind of just a reoccurring thing with these people. So like I said before, this has happened in several other national parks, but Yosemite is the national park that has happened the most in.
Yes. It's just crazy too, because it's not like they're walking in a trail and then they fall off a cliff, because you would hear them fall off the cliff. You would see them. You would find them. Mm-hmm. They didn't climb a tree because they'd still be there. They didn't fall into the ground because you would see that. Like,
And some people,
I don't understand.
And some people have been like, oh, well, they weren't even attacked by a bear or anything because we didn't hear screaming. We didn't hear grunts. Mm-hmm. We didn't hear – like these people just are gone.
Well, plus they're in a group. It's not like they're that far off. So
I know. Wow. Or with their family.
That's so scary.
I know. So before I jump in, I just want to say these disappearances do also involve kids. Actually, a majority of them are kids. Mm-hmm. And the example I have later is a 12-year-old. I don't go into detail about it, but if anyone is sensitive about that, maybe skip ahead 20 minutes or so, because for the next 20 minutes, we'll be talking about the disappearances. Also, I tried to research more things for this episode, but for some reason, I kept getting dragged back into this topic and went down a wormhole of events. It was weird. It was like this topic was like pulling me in. It's hard to explain because I seriously tried. I tried
Maybe
to look
someone
up,
needs to hear it.
You know what? Maybe they do. And it wouldn't be the first time that something like that has happened. A lot of people report that before their person goes missing or something, they have like a bad dream. about it. And yeah, it's like a weird vortex out there.
That's what I was going to say. It sounds like some portal or vortex or like something like that. Wow.
Also, I think what we'll probably end up doing is just a whole episode on these disappearances.
Because, that would be great.
Because they're not just in Yosemite. They're all over. And so I had to like dig to find just the Yosemite stuff. But I came across so much more that I just want to
And I think get this is there. Helpful for people who go out so they don't take unnecessary risks because this could happen.
Mm-hmm. So like I said before, these mysterious disappearances have a reoccurring theme to them. Almost all of them happen in broad daylight on heavily trafficked trails or areas, and their bodies, if they're found, are usually found near large bodies of water, but not close enough to the water that their death would be determined as drowning. Most of them are children that have an impairment of some way, so like a hearing impairment, autism, or something of those sorts. All are found either half naked or completely naked, and it looks as if they took off their own clothes, not like an animal or another person did. And when found by rescue teams, if they're found at all, their clothes seem to be neatly folded and seemingly untouched after years of having disappeared.
What?
Yes. So one specific case I read about, it said that this guy had like white sneakers, which are easy to get dirty. He was gone for years and his sneakers looked like they had not been touched. Like they were kept somewhere else and then placed on where they were found.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, some of the people that have never been found have like don't even leave a trace. So no footprints, no DNA, no clothes, nothing. And some that have been found dead are said to be found in a place where search and rescue had already searched several times before.
And this is where the theories will come in because I literally have like no clue.
Yeah. So we'll kind of talk about the search and rescue teams and what's weird about that. And the theories are going to be last.
They basically just vanish and then reappear. Is it years later, days later, weeks later?
Any. Days, weeks, months, years. It like random.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So can I ask one question? I don't know if you're going to go into it. Like, say someone disappears and then they reappear years later. Obviously, their body would just be bones. So are the remains that are found then bones? Or are they still, they just died?
So from what I've read, it said that some are badly decomposed.
Okay, so that's like bones.
Yeah, and then some are found just bones and, you know, or like fragments of bones, like pieces.
Yeah.
But when they do like autopsies and stuff, they determine that the cause of death is not from an animal. So it's not like an animal drug them.
Right.
You know what I mean? And ate them.
Also with the clothes being neatly folded and clean and in good shape. Yeah, something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, we kind of talked about the search and rescue teams. They would sometimes search these areas 2, 3, maybe 4 times and come up with nothing. And then years later, a body would randomly pop up in those areas that the search was conducted. Also, during their search, they brought in a team of bloodhounds and German shepherds to kind of help, you know, assist in the mission. But in some areas, even the dogs would refuse to go past. Like they would like cower down and like act confused.
And
I know. And rescue planes are also said to crash or have malfunctions near these specific areas.
It's like the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes. And we will go into that as well later on. Yeah. So I think by far the weirdest thing about these disappearances, though, as if all that wasn't weird, is that they're often found miles and miles away from where they disappeared and seem to have traveled through rugged, unclimbable terrain. And these are kids. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Like normally kids would want to find the easiest way out, so they'd go downhill. But these mm-hmm. kids are found uphill doing nearly impossible things. Like I know they hired some wilderness, survivor mm-hmm. guy to kind of go the route that they think this kid would have gone to get where mm-hmm. he was found. And he couldn't even do it, the survivalist. So it's like, how are these kids getting up to that high of terrain through like rugged brush and unpassable? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
How are they finding them then if no one goes up there?
Rescue planes and helicopters, things like that.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm just like in shock. So it's like hard for me to even like even well, come up with theories, anything because it's just like how.
Yeah. I think the theories later on might give you a little bit of insight, but no one really knows. So yeah, they determined that a kid wouldn't be able to move that quickly and up that type of terrain. We'll kind of jump into an example of when this happened, and then you can see just how odd the disappearances are.
Okay.
So in the 80s, a kid named Kenny Miller was 12 years old, and he had a mental capacity of like a four-year-old. Like he was had that impairment that I was telling you about. His parents left him down by the lake just to go cook dinner, and he was like throwing pebbles in the lake, just being a kid, playing. But they would go check on him every now and then just to, you know, like poke their head out, be like, Kenny, are you here? He'd respond until the last time they checked on him and he vanished, like without a trace. There was no sign of struggle, nothing. A month later, a group of hikers found Kenny's body 1,500 feet above the area where he was last seen. The area was incredibly inaccessible, rocky, and filled with painful bushes. So he would have had to climb all the way up there and pass through all of that, which I just can't see a kid wanting to do that.
Why would he? He would want his parents. He wouldn't be wandering off into like thorn bushes and rugged cliffs.
So other weird things about these disappearances, a lot of statistics say that these people will go missing near boulder field or large areas of granite. And then I said this before, but the most reoccurring are people and groups that are the first in line or the last in line who disappear. Mm-hmm. So now we'll kind of jump into the theories because I know you've been waiting.
Yeah. I know I haven't had a lot to say about that because it's like I can't even imagine what could be going on there.
Yeah, it's crazy. Do you want to hear the theories first and then my theory or my theory first?
Let's go with their theories first and see how close it is to yours.
It's not. So that's fine. So obviously some people think aliens, you know, Yosemite has had sightings of aliens before. So people think it's that. A lot of people think wild animals because, you know, that would be like illogical.
Right.
Yeah. Like a cougar can get up those terrains, but the clothes being folded is weird, so that doesn't really make sense. Some other sources say serial killers are in the area, which would kind of make sense, but then the serial killer would have to drag the body up that terrain, so it just doesn't make a whole
lot
of sense.
They would have to swipe them from the front or the back of the line without anyone noticing.
Right. And then, like, you would think you would hear something, scurrying, scuffling, something. And then another theory that I heard was some people that live out there are said to be feral. So, and this one, I guess I could see being somewhat logical, but it doesn't explain the deaths. So,
well, that's what I was going to say. Even if there were a feral person, why would they need to snatch a person and kill them? It's not like for food. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right. Well, here's the thing. They're kids, right? So I'm like, here's what they were thinking and kind of what I'm thinking is that these feral people are snatching kids to raise them to be feral. And these people can't speak because they've never been around civilization. So it would make sense that they were snatched up at a young age and couldn't speak. You know what I mean?
But no one has found like groups of feral people.
No. No. So that's kind of another reason why it might not be, you know.
Right.
The best theory. But it is a theory out there.
Okay.
Also, like the last theory that people have is kind of an ancient Native American legend again. And it's that there is a vortex between realms. So there's like a being that is said to be half living, half dead, that can transition between the vortex, the portal of like the living world and the death.
And so honestly, they think, that's like what it seems like anymore, right? With this. Because yes, none of it makes sense.
Yes, because these people are just vanishing. So really the only thing that makes sense is that they were scooped up and into a portal and then brought back and returned later. Yeah. Yeah, I know. So I honestly think that that one makes the most sense. And, you know, everyone else can kind of come up with. Yeah. Yeah. Normally I don't say that, but just with what we've learned about national parks and like Native American legends that have, you know, somewhat proven to be true, like with the water babies, I do believe this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah. My theory.
Yes.
Is
yes, that,
and I looked it up a little bit, and there are still some, you know, maybe reasons why this wouldn't be a thing, but I think they're getting granite poisoning. Like these people, for some reason, it affects people. Like maybe for some reason, the radon that's produced from granite particles affects their brain differently. And so they like go into this like this state where they become delusional and hallucinate, and they feel the need to take off all their clothes. And then I don't know, you know how when some people are
when they're freezing to death, they take off their clothes because their body interprets it as being hot.
Yeah So maybe like the granite is affecting them in that way, and it's making them, you know, feel that way and the need to take off their clothes and giving them some kind of like superpower strength to go up these rocks. Cause you know how when someone's like sick or delusional or something, they do crazy stuff that, you know,
like superhuman,
yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Is that a thing? Would you say radon come off of granite?
That's what I read, is that granite particles have something to do with radon, and radon creates cancer.
I just can't see it happening that quickly, though. Like, they're just on a hike. They're not living there for 20 years.
Yeah, and it only happens to certain people, but maybe kids just don't have the same – I don't know. That was kind of my theory. Yeah. I really think that's
also
it.
Also because they just keep disappearing. It's not like if you felt that way because you – got radon poisoning or whatever, I don't think that you would just disappear. You would have to walk off and people would notice, be like, hey, little Johnny, come back here. Quit walking off. Like, you're going to hear crunch, 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 you know, in the weeds. I just can't see the disappearance part of it. It's like they're just like snatched.
Yeah.
Like, and taken away, you know what I mean? And then just come back later. Yeah, that's a rough one.
I don't know.
It's so interesting, though.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like unbelievable. This is just like happening in our country. Just like,
I know.
Things just disappearing. And like, but you don't hear about it, you know? So.
And that's one thing they said, is the park keeps it very like hush hush. And the reason they think that. Yeah. The reason they think that is because they don't want people to not go to the national park, but I feel like that doesn't deter people.
Well, plus they don't have an explanation for it. If they had some type of explanation, they would probably try to tell people, but since they don't, they're like, let's just, it's a disappearance. And since we can't tell anyone what it is, let's just not, you know, just, let's just chalk it up to a disappearance and like be on our way with it.
Yeah. So a lot, and that's kind of, a lot of the research that I got was from this guy named David Paulides. Mm-hmm. And I guess he was some type of law enforcement assigned to national parks, or he had heard about the disappearances. I forgot his correlation to this, but essentially he got something notarized saying, hey, I have access to go in and look at all the files on these missing persons. And the park told him, we don't keep track of missing persons here. And so they wouldn't allow him access. And then he was like, okay, well, I still have, you know, this note. Can I come in and look around and kind of, you know, whatever? And they were like, well, you don't have enough books published in libraries for us to give you that information. So no. Yeah, it was like super weird. Like they're just being very secretive about it. And then they were like, he was like, okay, well, can I buy it? Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, but, you know, one for just Yosemite, if you want to buy that, it's going to be like $34,000. And then if you want all of the national parks, it's going to be like $1.1 million. And it's like, wait a second. So you don't have it, but you would sell the information that you don't have for that much money. It doesn't make sense. Yeah. So they're like very weird and secretive about it.
Yosemite.
Mm-hmm. Or National Parks, National Park Service. What's happening? What's up? So that is the disappearances. And now we can move on to something lighter before we go into something heavy again. So on a lighter note, Yosemite is known for its amazing views, like I said before, some of which include waterfalls. One specific fall that is unique to the park is called Horsetail Falls. It flows all season long, and it's beautiful as a fall by itself, but there are a few days at the end of February where it becomes a dazzling show known as the Firefall.
I think I've seen that.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's like really cool.
I know. And it only happens for a couple days in February, at the end of February. So like you'd have to go now.
Yeah, I saw a picture of it, but I don't know why or how that happens. So can you – do you have an explanation for it?
Yeah, it's actually not as crazy as you would think, but it is still cool, like the way it lights up. So if the conditions are just right, the sun will dip behind the horizon and then everything goes dark for a moment. Then as the sunlight disappears and the moonlight comes up, the waterfall catches the final rays, which reflect off the falls to create an effect that looks like liquid fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it looks like lava flowing down.
Yeah, I saw that. It looked so cool. And that's what it kind of looked like. It looked like it was just lit up right there. Mm-hmm. At first, it looked like it actually was like there was fire coming down.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, okay, well, obviously there can't be fire coming down. And then I noticed that you could see like the sun or the rays like hitting that area, which caused it to look like orangey and like bright. It was like really cool looking.
Yeah, it does look super cool. So this phenomenon occurs when the sky is free of clouds or haze and there has to be sufficient snow melt to feed the waterfall. So it's kind of one of those things again where everything has to line up.
So there's not always water coming from that?
No, there is, but sometimes it could be like a slow trickle, you know? Okay. But it has to, in order for the firefalls to happen, obviously there has to be enough water for it to look that way. Yeah. So you can witness this on the eastern edge of El Capitan on the valley floor. It's a very popular place that many people know about, but I figured I'd mention it because I hadn't heard of it until I actually went to Yosemite and researched what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you didn't go to that area? You guys didn't – well, you weren't staying at Yosemite very long, so that's why – another reason probably why you didn't get to do a lot.
Well, we saw the – yeah, we were only there for 2 days, and one day was taken up by whitewater rafting. But we did see the falls. It's just we didn't go at the right time to see the fire.
Mm-hmm. What month did you go?
June. Well, it was super weird because the southern part, SoCal, which is Southern California, was super – like cloudy and gloomy. But then once you got to NorCal, Northern California, it was like really sunny and nice weather and just beautiful. So I didn't know if you knew what SoCal and NorCal were.
No one can see it, but I was giving her a look.
All right. So that was, you know, my lighter note and how to bring you guys back up. But now I'm going to bring you back down with we another place. Barely got up.
I know. Yosemite? Wow.
There's not a lot of ups here that are, you know, lesser known because people only talk about the pretty stuff. So
You're right.
Yeah, this is the lesser known pod, not the here's the most popular things to do pod. Not the common pod.
Right.
All right. So there's another place where death and disappearances are a mystery. This place also has amazing views if you dare to venture to it. It's called Tenaya Canyon. And it's known as the Bermuda Triangle of Yosemite. I know. I thought it was crazy that you said that.
Full circle.
I thought it was so crazy that you said Bermuda Triangle earlier. That's why I was like, did she read my notes?
I did not.
I know.
It's just the only thing that I can think of that things disappear and people actually know about it. Like know about things disappearing.
Yeah, but the strange thing is this isn't where those people disappeared. It's just another section where people have disappeared.
Can I jump back for one second? Yeah. The disappearances, is that on any specific trail or just in general in the woods of Yosemite?
In general.
So it's not like avoid trail X because you're going to get got. It's just like,
right.
It's just anywhere. Okay. Okay.
So we can post a map. It's called they have like a cluster map or something, and it tells you where most of these disappearances have happened, but it doesn't give you specific trails. It just shows you the roundabout area in Yosemite and all over the world where it's happened.
Well, that could be helpful.
Yeah. So we'll post that. All right. So in Tenaya Canyon, there are no trails. So it's not like a designated hiking spot. There are actually signs that tell you if you're not an experienced hiker, go back, because it is like a very treacherous part of Yosemite Park that runs from Tenaya Lake down to Yosemite Valley.
Would you go?
I have thought about it. It makes me nervous though, because
people. Would you consider yourself an experienced hiker?
Oh yeah, I would. I think. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I would still be scared to go here, though, just because of what happened. And I don't know. I believe this stuff, so. A lot of people who venture through the canyon are searching for good climbing spots or hard areas to hike. Because I don't know if you know this, but Yosemite was, like, the founder of rock climbing. So, like, you know, the national park that brought in the most rock climbers. And
I was going to say, I was like, what do you mean Yosemite is the founder of their man?
I didn't know how to put that. Like it was where rock climbing first happened.
First started, originated.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of people go to this area to look for climbing spots. But this is probably somewhere that most people would want to avoid because of the nickname Bermuda Triangle of Yosemite. And it got that nickname because of the amount of accidents, injuries, and deaths that have occurred over the years there. Some people even believe that the canyon is cursed by spirits of the original inhabitants of Yosemite who were violently displaced by the Mariposa Indian War in 1850.
I'm in for that theory.
I know. Yeah. So we're going to go into the residents before it became a park. So the canyon was named after Chief Tenaya, the leader of the Awanichi tribe that lived in Yosemite Valley before they were driven out by the Mariposa Battalion, which was a group of armed volunteers sent by California's governor to subdue the Native Americans in the area. So the battalion captured Chief Tenaya and his people and forced them to relocate to a reservation near Fresno. However, they obviously weren't happy with this, and some of them escaped and returned to Yosemite Valley, where they were attacked again by the battalion. Chief Tenya's son was killed in battle, and he reportedly cursed his enemies and his homeland before fleeing into the canyon. He was later killed by a rival tribe near Mono Lake, and before he died, he said, in quotes, "We'll follow in your footsteps. I will not leave my home, but be with the spirits among the rocks, the waterfalls, and the rivers, and the winds. Wherever you go, I will be with you. You will not see me, but you will fear the spirit of the old chief and grow cold. The great spirits have spoken." I know.
That's a lot.
That's intense.
That is very intense.
Yeah. So I figured that with your episode next week or, you know, the week after, there will be probably some spooky, creepy things that has happened there.
I'll dig into that. I was trying to hold off on Yosemite until we did your episode so we don't like overlap. But I think, yeah, I'll definitely look into that.
Yeah. Wow. There has to be some presence or something.
Yeah. That's like undeniable. He made a public declaration, and I think wow. I'm so excited about this now.
I know. That's why, like, when you were telling me, oh, I already started researching, I'm like, just wait. You'll know more.
Oh, just like Yosemite is so interesting. I couldn't help myself.
There's so much creepy stuff there. So much.
And it's so funny. Like, I had no clue before we started doing this podcast. I just thought Yosemite National Park, you know, cool place to go, big trees. Yosemite Sam. You probably don't even know what that is, do you?
No, I don't know what that is.
It's like an old-timey cartoon. I think his name was Yosemite Sam. He was like a pew pew, like a gunslinger. Like
yeah. That's cute. I think I know what you're talking about, but I didn't know that was his name.
I mean, like, I haven't seen it probably in 20 years, so I could be, like, mixing it up with something else, but I think that's correct.
That's funny. All right. So let's talk about some creepy things lurking around Yosemite. These have existed in Native American legend, but these creatures have also made their presence known in recent memory. The people of the area and those around the world that have seen them call them night crawlers. They're eerily similar to what Native Americans refer to as totems. When the Awanichi were questioned about these, they reported that the night crawlers are a peaceful race of beings that come from another planet to rebuild the union between man and nature, which kind of reminded me of Avatar. But they don't look like Avatar, but just the fact that they're there to like rebuild man and nature together, because that's what Avatar is all about, is like they live off the land and, you know. Yeah. We can post a video about them, but these night crawlers really reminded me, like the way that they look, they reminded me of that TikTok, that viral TikTok that was going around in like 2019 or 2020. Where you would put your arms and your legs through like the holes of your hoodie and then put your hood on. And then you would do like that, you know, whoa,
the
you
dance.
Can really dance. Yeah. Or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it's because you told, I know I wasn't, I just happened to run across them. So I saw them too. So you're like 100% right. It's exactly, what, I should put that video of you up doing that.
Yeah, you should.
When TikTok, that was like when we first discovered TikTok.
Yes.
I remember that. And like, that's like one of the first videos we ever did. It was so funny. I watched it like 1,000 times.
I know. We should do a side by side.
Oh, definitely.
Of the night crawlers and me.
Yes. And you doing the TikTok.
Yeah. Because seriously, they do look like that. They're just taller.
It's just so, they are like, I know we're like making it sound like they're cute and fuzzy or something, but like it is like really creepy.
Yeah,
it's just like two big legs or something just like walking in a almost like a it's just legs.
I know. I almost hope that it's true, but a lot of people think that it's just like, you know,
a hoax.
People like a hoax.
Well, like I said, I didn't mean to see this, but it was creepy and I had already been looking, and like someone saw that, and it was on someone's like night cam in 2008. So it was like fuzzy and grainy, and then no one saw it again until like 2018 or something. And it was like sharper because cameras got better, and it was the same figures.
Yeah. What you're referring to, I guess it was like a man from Fresno, and he woke up to his dogs barking. And then that's when he caught like the night crawlers on the system. So it's weird.
Can you imagine seeing that?
No, that's so scary. I got really like, defensive over that.
The for sale sign up the next day. Yeah, that's me putting in this for sale sign.
Right. So I think you'll find this next part pretty interesting because it deals with the law.
The law.
The law. This is the felonious plane crash that happened in 1977 at Yosemite Lake, which is now nicknamed Dope Lake.
Dope. 77, good one, year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the year you were born. I forgot. Yes. Nice.
Noise.
That's how old my mom is.
You do the math. I won't publicly acknowledge.
All right. So one winter morning in 1977, two waiters who worked at the Ahwahnee Hotel, which is a well-known lodge in the Yosemite area, set out on snowshoes for an overnighter, like an overnight hike, in the Yosemite backcountry, where their plan was to go out, hike in the snow, which automatically sounds terrible. But then they also planned to trip on LSD while hiking in the snow in Yosemite, freezing cold at night.
Horrible idea.
Yeah. So sounds like a great time for them. Maybe not for us. 6 miles into their hike, they found what looked like a suspended bridge in the trees. And they were like, what is that? Like, are we tripping? Mm-hmm. Obviously. And
another guy was like, yes.
Right. And so when they awoke the next morning and the acid had wore off, they were able to see it more clearly. And they had actually come across an airplane's wing and the debris trail that followed it to the lake.
And no one knew about it?
I guess not. Which I don't know how, because on – well, actually, you know what? I do know how. Okay. On planes, there's a signal that goes out. It's an ELT signal. It's an emergency locator transmitter. They probably had that turned off, and you'll see why.
Was this a small plane?
Not like
I fly. It wasn't like a commercial plane. That's what I'm asking.
Wasn't commercial, but it also wasn't – hold on. Why does the street sweeper have to stop right in front of our house? Move along. Move along, sir.
Get to step it.
Get to step it. Okay, so the plane wasn't like a super small plane like I fly, but it also wasn't a commercial plane. It was more like this guy had bought a jet specifically, and he was a pilot.
Okay.
So when they woke up, like I said, they saw the wing of the plane, and they gathered the information that was on the wing, like the number, to bring back to the valley and alert rangers of a probable plane crash. So over the next few days, agents from the National Transport Safety Board, the Federal Aviation Administration, which is the FAA, the Air Force, the DEA, which is Drug Enforcement Administration, and Customs, quickly gathered in the valley to investigate. So one might be wondering why the DEA and Customs were involved in a plane crash.
I was literally going to ask you, why is DEA there?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I have a theory,
over the following days, federal officers hauled out over 3,000 pounds of Mexican red-haired marijuana. And you're going to hate this part because it's literally your worst nightmare. But one diver who was a rescue diver tried to make the dive into the frozen lake by cutting the ice with a chainsaw. And when he got down there, he said it was the worst dive he's ever done. Not only was it cold, but the visibility was completely trashed. There was a lot of leakage from the fuel. So he was all greased up and couldn't see anything. And there was just debris everywhere in the lake, like floating around. And so he said that due to all of those things, he would try and see, he would go up until it was safer to go down. So basically he came back up and was like, all this stuff is down there. I can't see mm-hmm. anything. It's not safe. So I'm going to wait until we're able to, you know, more successfully and safely perform this rescue mission.
That sounds awful.
Yeah. So on top of it being like dark and snowy and cold, there was also an approaching storm. So logistically speaking, they shut down the operation because remember it's wintertime and the lake is half frozen anyway. Mm-hmm. So given the circumstances, the park superintendent chose to wait for the spring to thaw to completely recover the operation because he believed that since it was so far in the backcountry that no one would go out there and see the wreckage and snoop around. But we know how people can be nosy. Mm-hmm. Sure. And of course, once people caught wind of this, they made the trek out there.
Just random people, randos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some were random, but then there were other people who were like, and National Parks After Dark does a whole episode on this. So if you want like the details, including like the wife's story, they go into a lot more detail about this.
The wife pilot?
Yeah. Yeah, the wife of the pilot story.
That's interesting.
But the other people who went there were called climbers. And these people were essentially squatters of the park. So you're not supposed to live there. And normally campsites have like a 14-day limit on camping. But these people would camp for 14 days, move to another spot, camp again, move to another spot. So they were just kind of like, you know.
Is that allowed?
No. But law enforcement couldn't do anything about it because they kept moving. So it was hard to keep track of them. So with them living in the park and catching wind of this, they made the hike out, which was like 16 miles out in the backcountry to, you know, look at the wreckage and grab as much weed as they could. So
– and it was in the winter.
They made it, right? Yeah, in the winter. So it was freezing cold. So they went out to the lake and smashed holes in the ice so that they could get through. And they grabbed as much weed that was free floating in the water as they could. And even though most of it was soaked in water and jet fuel, they still smoked it and started selling it.
With
which
jet
is
fuel?
Just disgusting. Jet fuel.
So that's going to like kill people.
Yeah. But they didn't care because it was like supposedly at the time this was like super good weed.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So they were like, oh, we could make a lot of money off of this. And yeah. And then just – eventually, the bodies of the pilot and co-pilot were discovered, and the rest of the weed was confiscated. Altogether, it ended up being 6,000 pounds of weed that equaled close to $4.5 million. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So some other fun facts that are lesser known about Yosemite is that Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, and Maverick were filmed in Yosemite.
Mm.
I don't know
Star
if you've
Trek
seen
5
either
is,
of those.
Star Trek V, I'm trying to – oh, wait. I've seen – Star Trek, Star Wars. I've seen Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Never mind. I didn't see Star Trek.
Have you seen Maverick or no?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
who's in it?
I haven't either. I don't know, but I looked at the cover of it and it looked familiar, so I know it's something I've seen. I just haven't seen like the actual movie. Yosemite is also home to one of the tallest waterfalls in North America. It's Yosemite Falls, and it stands at a whopping 2,425 feet, which is a really tall waterfall.
Did you see it?
I did, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it's kind of cool because it doesn't look that big when you're right under it. But if you step back, you can see that it goes up way higher. So it's like a really long stretch of fall, and then it hits like a little bump and then goes into a little waterfall.
Oh, I bet that's cool.
Another fun fact, a president camping trip actually led to the expansion of the park. So in 1903, President Theodore Roosevelt and John Muir went camping. And at the end of their trip, Roosevelt signed a law that brought the Yosemite Valley and Mariposa Grove under the jurisdiction of federal government, thus expanding the park.
Mm.
Yeah. And then we kind of talked about this earlier. There's those firefalls.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at sunset, the rock formations of El Capitan and Half Dome also look as if they're on fire like the falls.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it happened in more than one place.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I also have it on when we post this episode, what you see, like mm-hmm. the little icon, will be that.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Will be the fire falls the, or – okay.
No, the sunset rock formations.
Okay.
The fire rock, yeah. The park is home to the rare Sierra Nevada red fox. There's only about 18 to 39 left, mm-hmm. and it has genetic roots that date back to the last ice age.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, so they cute. Actually – I know. They actually thought that they were extinct in mm-hmm. the early 1900s because they hadn't seen them since. Mm-hmm. And then one day they found a bite mark in a bag – and they investigated the bite mark and the DNA from, like, the DNA they already had
mm-hmm.
and then matched it to that. So now they know that they're aww. Out there. Yeah.
And now they found, like, a few of them?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's so cute.
I know. Yosemite is also famous for its giant sequoia trees, which are estimated to be approximately 3,000 years old, and they can grow to be 30 feet in diameter and more than 250 feet tall.
That's what I want to see because I see that mm-hmm. on people's pictures all the time and they just look like regular trees until you see a person standing next to them.
Yeah.
And it's huge. I can't even imagine standing next to one of those trees.
I have a picture. Yeah. I have a picture and I'll send it to you so we can post it on Instagram.
I feel like that's definitely huge. On my bucket list. Mm-hmm. Like that's one thing that I 100% want to do in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool. So the last interesting fact is in 1932, Yosemite bid for the Winter Olympics.
Really?
Yeah.
they didn't get it. They don't even have – oh, I was going to say they don't even have places to have Olympics, right?
I don't know because they have skiing.
You mean on the lake?
No, they have skiing. Like,
oh, yeah, right. Skiing.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But I thought that was cool.
That is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I didn't realize the Olympics have been around that long either.
Yeah. I don't know.
To me, the Olympics have only been around since like the 1970 or something. I don't
picture. So the year you were born.
Right, exactly. they're as old as I am.
Makes sense. That's when you first heard about them.
That does make sense.
Yeah. I don't know if it's super well known, but I didn't know any of that stuff until researching. So I figured, I mean, not that I know everything, but if I didn't know, mm-hmm. most people wouldn't know because I feel like I'm a pretty average person.
I agree. Like with Yosemite, I just assumed, like I had said earlier, it was just like a plain old national park, but now when I go, I'm going to be a little more cautious
mm-hmm.
and stay with my group and not walk in the front or the back of the line in my group.
Yeah, probably
I'll
smart.
Be a middle person.
Makes sense.
And definitely no night hiking. I'm going to stay away from the bears.
Oh my gosh, that was so scary.
I think this is a very good educational episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And mysterious.
I know. But yeah, that's all I have.
Yeah. It was good.
Thanks.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear yours since there's a ton of creepy stuff out there.
Also, I would like to know if any of our listeners have had any weird experiences at Yosemite. That would be interesting to know.
Yeah, definitely let us know. We're going to record in another week and a half, so next Friday. So if you guys do have any stories, be sure to submit them this week to us.
I would say through Instagram, because you can't see through the podcast,
through Instagram.
Right? through Instagram at the Lesser Known Podcast. I think, I don't know if it shows up as Lesser Known Pod or Lesser Known Podcast, but either way, you'll see our logo. And if you follow us there and you can message us and let us know if you have had any weird experiences, we'll definitely share them on here.
Yeah. I'll also post a little Q&A at the bottom of this podcast. So once you do submit your story, just, you know, type a little blurb like submitted or, you know, thanks for sharing my story or like whatever you want to do, just so we know that you did share it and we can go look at our Instagram. Yeah.
100%. I'm excited about that part too. I want to hear everyone's stories. It's just like such a mystery. It'll be nice to hear from actual people who have experienced it.
Yeah. And if we don't get them in time, we could always do just like a small little segment.
Yeah. We had talked about doing that before. We're going to like gather everyone's like listener stories and maybe possibly make like a sub, not to take the place of our regular episodes, but maybe like an extra episode in the week. Mm-hmm. Like a little bonus episode.
Mini-sode.
Yes, with listener tales, maybe something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll come up with a cool name for it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll workshop that a little.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, see you next week. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.